Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Adil Mansour, Mr. Mansour. I don't know why I just went Betty Davis on you, but there's your welcome. That's one hell of a greeting, right? How you doing?
I'm doing okay, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's about time, because you do a lot in this city. Like, so much so that, like, how do you refer to yourself?
Oh.
Does artist, like, do the job? Like,
I'm trying to think what my mom would say. She wouldn't know what to say. But I guess I refer to myself as a theater director and an educator.
All right.
Yeah.
So you teach.
I'm a teacher.
You are so full of art that you must impart your knowledge onto others.
Or that I'm so desperate to learn. That, no, I mean, it's amazing how much my teaching has impacted the arts practice.
Now, is it theater in particular that you teach?
Kind of. I get to work with this awesome group called Dreams of Hope.
Yes.
They're a LGBTQIA+ teen group here in Pittsburgh, and we make an original play every year.
Wow.
That's my primary work with the group. But in addition to that kind of teaching, I used to work at the Warhol Museum.
Okay. Pretty cool place to work day in and day out, I imagine.
I mean, the most incredible environment.
The balloon room. Like, I would try to lobby to make that my office, if possible.
It'd be a little distracting, but I think...
Oh, no. I mean, I would probably get more work done that way, actually. It's just, my mind works backwards from a lot of people, but I digress.
Having worked at the Warhol, and I'm excited about exploring art with folks as well. So, mm-hmm. That's started with teaching, was thinking about, you know, I was trained as a theater person and was all of a sudden working in a museum and learned the way your brain can explode when you're staring at a painting.
Yeah.
And it has fueled my theater practice. Like, I think Hatch is kind of very much situated on a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary practice. And how does this wonderful youth art behind us inform
I thought you did this.
Well, on a good day, I maybe could get there. Isn't that awesome?
Well, yeah, so we are, our backdrop here is at Winchester Thurston School, where you are rehearsing now, and we'll certainly talk more about that. But as an artist who, you know, pulls a lot from not only stage art, but, you know, physical pieces of artwork on a wall, what grabs you about art in general, about either a painting or something you see on stage? What to you makes it important or impresses you?
What an awesome question. I think, for me, it's about the conversations that a piece can spark. Be it theater, dance, a movie, a song. If you can spend just as much time talking about it as you did witnessing it, then I think at least that much time, right?
That's a good litmus test. And whether you maybe appreciate it as strongly as others or not, or if you would, you know, hang it in your own home or not, still, you can have a conversation about it.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of pieces I might not, quote-unquote, aesthetically like.
Yeah.
But if they've got me talking, then it did something.
Right. Because, you know, I've seen things, you know, that have sold at auction for, like, $600,000 that I wouldn't pay a dime for at a flea market. But here I am talking about it, right? So that's something.
Yeah.
So what then, when you are directing a piece or producing a piece, you know, what above all do you strive to then get across in that?
I think a clarity as to why the team that told that story is telling that story and why it's being told to the people listening. I think to know why it's situated in Pittsburgh in 2016, mm-hmm. why it's about, like, why did you do it? Why did you just spend months or years of your life thinking about it? Why did you just, you know, trap 200 people in a building and make them experience the thing for 2 hours? Like, if there isn't a grounding into why other than it's cool.
Or how about we thought we were going to make money?
Well, I think...
like when you do Guys and Dolls for the 40th time, yeah? Right. Not that you do. I'm just saying the general you know, right. out there.
Yeah.
But Hatch Arts Collective, which is... you are a founding member of this. So what is an arts collective, actually? There's three of you.
Yes.
And you seem to get along pretty well, which I think is kind of a rarity for three artists, you know, yeah. To be in sync like that. So what's the story behind this?
So it's Paul Cruz, Nicole mm-hmm. Shiro, and myself, and we gathered as a trio in 2012, a long time ago, but not that long ago. Paul and I went to undergrad together.
Okay.
That was a long time ago, and it feels like it. So we went to undergrad together in Chicago, outside of Chicago, and we never had the opportunity to make work there together. But we, I think, knew that we were curious. He's a playwright, and I'm a director. Uh-huh. We're kind of curious what that would be like. So we moved to Pittsburgh to find out. And we started working on a play. Our goal was to get one play on its feet, and we knew we could not do it alone, the two of us. So we asked Nicole Shiro, this incredible producer and operations person in town. And we had no intention of ever becoming a group or an organization. That was never the goal. The goal was to get four chickens on its feet, on their feet.
Now, wait, what? Literally four chickens on their feet?
Well, it was theater, so there's four lovely human beings playing chickens.
Okay, so this is the play you were talking about.
This
yes.
was the first play.
Chickens in the Yard.
Exactly.
Yes, that was produced here in Pittsburgh last year.
Yeah, two times now.
Am I spoiling your story to say that it was actually done?
No, not at all.
Wait, do you remember? I auditioned for that. Do you remember?
In the Yard?
Yes. I was in a room with the three of you. And I auditioned for that, and Carla Booz was there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I have read the script, and I think folks from Berg Vivant saw it and reviewed it. You don't remember this, do you?
I should. You've totally caught me red-handed.
I am so disappointed that I made such a lousy impression. But you know what? I didn't have a lot of experience being a chicken. I think that may be it. But no, you all were very nice, and it was really kind of, you know, I think everybody was like kind of sitting on like, you know, the floor, and it was sort of like, you know, a nice environment. It felt very welcoming. The three of you, you know, were in tune. Everybody was getting along. Well, I felt very comfortable,
even though
I gave a horrible performance, apparently.
That is
No, the three of you were really nice to audition for, and you know, and Carla with Quantum Theater was there. Probably chuckling at me in the background or something. But I guess I needed to be a little more chicken-like. Maybe that was the thing. I don't know.
And it was. We were very. I'm glad that it came off as a welcoming room. In that, if
oh yeah,
well, we were overwhelmed. We were in the best way possible. We had never imagined that we would get to be in a room like that. We had never thought that all of a sudden we were. It was just unbelievable, that opportunity. It was out of this world. And the auditions, we didn't even think about it, were the first part of that process. You know, and all of a sudden we were kind of on the spot in a really different way than I had ever prepared for. So my mind was flying. Like, it was just everywhere. So I remember very little from those 3 days. Very little.
Okay, that was a pretty good backpedal. But now, you said that you Hatch Collective set out to produce one play, to get one play on its feet. You've done that.
Yeah.
So are you finished? What now?
Well, that was 3 years ago, and eight productions ago.
Yeah.
And I think in that process, the three of us fell in love with working together. We realized that as a trio, there's something really special that at least gave us inspiration and made us feel alive in a way I had not before. And we were really fortunate with the other people that came into that room. I mean, I think about that moment very fondly,
mm-hmm.
very, very fondly. And it was kind of a coincidence. That show had just ended in The Drift in Pittsburgh. So The Drift is a kind of visual arts-based collective, and they do this really cool work where they invite people to present work on the river.
Oh.
Steve Gersh, Scott Andrews.
I don't know about this. That sounds pretty cool.
They're great. And they've kind of altered what they're doing. It's always changing and shifting, but the artists that are at the root of it are still in town.
So wait a minute. Are they, you're on a boat?
They have this really cool raft, and people do all kinds of stuff. all kinds of stuff.
You know, I have said for years they should bring riverboat gambling to Pittsburgh. I can't believe this hasn't been done.
I think you need to pitch the Drift.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if they could. Maybe they get away with, like, bingo on a raft.
I feel like Pittsburgh's
that
ready.
Would be great, though. Bingo on a raft. That's I would go to that. I don't need to know anything else. If it's for a good cause, great. I'm for it. Just put me on a raft and give me my dauber. I mean, bingo is nerve-wracking enough for me because, you know, I but then to put it on, you know, water on a boat adds a whole other element of stress. I think, you know, that would really be what I need in my hectic and crazy life. What do you think?
I feel ready.
See, this is creative energy going back and forth right here.
This is what Hatch does.
I am feeling it. I can imagine how when the three of you get together, you're just unstoppable. So you've got Driftless happening.
Yeah.
Is this the Drifters, Driftless? Is there a...
There's very much a relationship.
Okay.
In that, so the Drift invites us to do a project, and they said, hey, you've got a raft and a river, and what do you want to do? And... we had been in conversation of a lot of different things, but it was the perfect storm and the perfect moment. And we did a 30-minute performance underneath the 31st Street Bridge in 2013 now, like right after Chickens had closed. And that was our first kind of stab at this conversation around fracking.
Okay, so what was that production, actually?
It was called Driftless. Okay. We left the name the same. And it was in response to Paul's younger brother, one of his younger brothers, is an environmental activist in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And he had just chained himself, not chained himself, they had prevented sand trucks from being able to do their work in Minnesota. So the fracking process in Pittsburgh, one of the main ingredients in the process is sand. Many people might not know that. And the sand comes from Minnesota. The majority of it, the best place, one of the best places to get the sand that we need to be able to do it is Minnesota. And so Paul's brother's out there doing activism work against the sand, the frack sand mining.
Okay, where they are getting the sand to frack in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I follow.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, fracking alone, I mean, I don't understand a lot about it, but I don't understand how it's legal. Okay. Now, and this is not a political statement. This is just my wrapping my head around it because it's been explained to me how it works. And it sounds to fracking to me sounds like a diabolical plot of a James Bond villain. That, like, we will bore into the earth and crack it open and extract the gas. Doesn't it sound like something that, like, Ernst Stavros Blofeld would be, like, doing in the Swiss Alps and Bond would have to stop? I mean, it just is, like, nefarious. Like, we're going to mine into the Earth's core and extract the lava. It just sounds like so ridiculous and horrible, but it happens. And it apparently is catching people's tap water on fire. So is my understanding legitimate?
I mean, so Paul understood it as a love story.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well,
I think they're both, I think all of the understandings of it, I think thinking about it poetically is actually quite helpful. Thinking about it as a movie or thinking about it as a James Bond moment.
Well, okay, I'm glad we're in agreement here, yeah.
I think there's something really powerful about it. And that's one of the images Paul creates in this play, and it started 3 years ago right away. The sand comes from Minnesota and is injected into our land here in Pennsylvania.
Okay, they just throw sand underground, all right.
And it changes everything. You know, the same way someone's love might, right? This person comes from somewhere else and is a part of my being all of a sudden, and I'm totally different and new. Is it always good? No.
I can see Valentine's. You inject sand into my heart and expel gas from me, which you then collect for a profit, right? I'm feeling the love, yeah.
That'll be the
try,
first.
Try that at a bar and see how you do as a pickup line. Yeah. I could do worse. I have done worse. I'm with you. I'm totally all about this.
No, the play starts with a section of the play that is called The Fracking Love Story. And Paul is kind of invoking multiple times in the play, the current version of it, the images of fracking and kind of the reality of fracking and thinking about how we can put it on a stage for an audience to start grasping what is actually happening just scientifically.
Yeah.
And what else we can relate it to. The way you said, you know, I know very little about fracking. That's exactly why this project started. Me and Paul and Nicole knew very little about this thing that we understood was deep and powerful and meaningful to where we all lived. And, you know, Paul had a sibling deeply invested in the conversation, and we wanted to know more. And the thing that kind of struck me in the original conversations 3 years ago, Paul's brother was a part of a group of Catholic workers. And it was a group of folks coming from a really kind of immersed religious experience. And both, or all three, Paul, Nicole, and I, all grew up in very, very religious households and have different experiences with religion today. But what we can all kind of really relate on deeply is, in the same way someone might be deeply, deeply religious, we have blind faith and total obsession with our art form, right? Like, we have found nonprofit and arts practice as this place where we find ritual and story and culture and have this deep, deep belief in that what we are doing is the most important and meaningful thing we could be doing. So when all of a sudden I started thinking about fracking and what you must believe to be able to be a part of any of the conversation, mm-hmm. be it that you're an activist or someone that's leasing your land or a business owner or an oil magnate, your beliefs must be so solid that they felt like they made me think about my parents in really important ways.
So that's how you're telling this story, which gives it a whole other depth than something that's, you know, I guess preachy, you know, like fracking is bad or fracking is good, you know, or like some film strip that you would be shown in school. It's a lot deeper than that.
Yeah, it's being, the play is almost being like carried by two saints, by Saint Peter and Saint Barbara. So preachy is an interesting word, because in certain ways, we do have our two Catholic saints.
Is this Barbara here?
That is Saint Barbara
on your poster,
yeah.
Postcard.
Patroness of miners and explosions. Isn't she awesome?
Really, there is a patron saint of miners and explosions. Now, those are two things you probably don't want like together.
And unfortunately, are together.
And one saint governs them both.
Yeah, and artillery, and she's cool. Saint Barbara's cool.
Yeah.
Her dad chopped her head off. She's a martyr and a virgin and did some really... Yeah, the images of St. Barbara are interesting. I know.
And then, well, I'm learning a heck of a lot here today.
That's what we hope with the play.
Well, already you were serving that purpose. So yes, Babs here.
St. Barbara and St. Peter kind of put the play forth. It's almost as if it is... They're taking care of their land and their people and what that means. And we found some kind of... I'm excited for folks to see some of the images that we've found in our rehearsal room with those.
And you've got a great cast here. You've got Ken Bolden, Tammy Tsai, Siobhan Christensen. These are all, like, my favorite people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How on earth did you get all these folks together? This is amazing.
Right?
This is an amazing cast
here. Yeah, and Alex Silverbutt and Trevor Butler. Like, I mean, all five of them are really just... incredibly talented, perfect for their roles, really, really dynamic, make the most interesting decisions. And on top of it, they're all really nice. They're all really kind people that want to be in the room, that want to experiment and try stuff out. We feel really lucky. It's kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's really overwhelming.
And folks need to get down to see this at the New Hazlet. You're only running 4 days, right? 11th through 14th of August. So, shaking things up, is that a bad term for when you're talking about fracking?
I think it's actually totally appropriate.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That is exactly what we're doing, right?
Yeah, I do believe. How close is it to Pittsburgh? I mean, are there people, like, fracking in Pittsburgh?
They're not legally allowed to frack, technically, in Pittsburgh itself right now. But it isn't far away. And that's part of why this play feels so important.
It causes earthquakes, doesn't it?
There have been... reports of connecting the two things for sure.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, this is a good perspective for you to hear, like, what a simpleton on fracking thinks of fracking. You know, I thought that was just in James Bond villain movies when they, like, crack open the earth and take things out of it. So maybe, you know, for the sequel, this will help you.
And we all walked, and I still very much think of myself as a novice in the conversation. There are things about it that I've had to understand to make sure we're telling the stories authentically.
Yeah.
But in no way am I an expert. And we've been really lucky. We have gotten to work with experts to get here. So we've spent 3 years now on this project. And almost a year of that, Paul, the playwright, was spending interviewing dozens and dozens of people around this conversation. So some of them were activists. Other people were politicians. There are people that work in the industry, business owners from Washington County that all have different perspectives. And all three of us walked into this journey thinking we were very much anti-fracking because our peers were.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, if you talk to a group of artists...
So wait, are you saying that now maybe you kind of dig it?
Is I don't know that I dig it. I do understand that it is just a complicated conversation. And that to say, you know, fracking needs to stop tomorrow has consequences. And we're learning what those are. Mm. We've started to learn what those are.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think just, you know, being in the arts community, yeah, you know, as we both are, that is the very liberal stance on it. It's horrible, it's terrible, it's bad. I don't know any better because I am not, you know, well informed about it. So, but this is great because this is what people should do is find out the facts about things before you go, you know, tearing down a path about it or writing a play about it. So I think you guys have approached this in a really interesting way. So then is it too much to say that as a result of this, you're looking to see some sort of social change based on this play? What is the result that your group is seeking by putting this
That's
on?
That's awesome. I really hope that people think about it for beyond our... that people keep thinking about it. I hope that people keep thinking about the conversation and have a little bit more of human compassion around it. That the next time they pick up a newspaper and they see some fact about some fracking thing that's happening an hour away, they can imagine, oh, that is impacting someone that's working in a truck who might have a wife, who might have a husband, who might be, right? There are real people at the heart of this conversation. Hmm. It's not just some empty corporation and random farms that are being attacked. There's real people on all sides of the conversation. And that their experiences are legitimate. Often, I think when people... So when I should talk about myself. When I started thinking about this, I know a lot of times my gut response for people who were upset about it, I'm like, why don't you just move? Just move, right? Just move. You can't just move. That's not right. A real thing. And thinking about displacement, I mean, it's very relevant and important to us here in Pittsburgh right now, right? There's a reality to that. But people in the counties surrounding our city are being asked to leave or are being put into these positions where they have really hard choices to make. Mm. And as much as this play is about science and fracking and politics, this play is also about a husband and a wife going through a very, very, very challenging thing. And they're trying to figure out how to support themselves and each other and how to build an IKEA table. I mean, they also have like real... very important IKEA table situation.
Well, I could learn a lot from that too because it's a pain whenever I have to do it.
Oh yeah. Come see the play. You'll get to see an IKEA table go from box to table.
Well, if it's anything like it is when I do it, it's got to be a 3-hour play, right?
It's close.
So you buckle up, folks. Yeah, well, and if that can be entertaining, then I could be making millions. Every time I get a Google Flugel from them, I don't know which end is up. And, of course, it's never bolts or anything that match any tool known to man, only in, you know, Sweden or IKEA land, in the little Allen wrenches. I'm sorry I'm going on about this, but I don't have a lot of opportunity to vent about it. So this is therapeutic for me.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, I'll have to see this. And, you know, if you see a little, you know, misty-eyed Brian Edward in the crowd, it's because I know what they're going through. So it's relatable, is what I'm trying to say to you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So then the result is, so folks walking away from this, you hope that they feel...
compassionate towards the story of the folks that they share state with.
Mm.
And we're hoping that, you know, it's not only a Pittsburgh audience, we're hoping that it's also a surrounding county audience. And that we're hoping there are other people in the audience who get to see their own stories on stage. And they're coming from, hopefully, we're working really, really hard and wanting them to come from as authentic of a place as possible.
And it's not pro-fracking or anti-fracking, it's about fracking. Because I think that might be what somebody in passing may assume about this.
It's about fracking, but I think it's no one will walk out of that play thinking that Hatch is pro-fracking. I think it's clear. I think it is clear, and we've been really specific and direct about that as well, right? We have a public statement on our website citing our opinion and our stance.
Yeah, I guess that's important because, you know, It's a hot topic right now, and the environment is a little politically charged at present. You may have observed, so I think that's important to maybe state that too.
And it's hopefully a chance for not only people. So you're asking this great question: what are the audiences going to get? Part of it, you know, they'll take the human experience away from the play itself, but being a Hatch experience, something that I think unifies our Hatch experiences, is that it's not just a 90-minute play, that it is an entire evening experience.
Mm-hmm.
That is being... we're integrating a lot of different art forms into the evening and a lot of different experiences. So after the play, if folks want and they're in the lobby, we are having each night two different organizations represented that are somehow involved in the conversation.
Oh, good.
So there is an opportunity for audience members who, if they're trying to figure out what can I do next, what can happen now, they have an opportunity to sign up and find out what they could do next. We also are working with three artists who think about fracking in their own practice, and will be presenting their work in the lobby space. So there's this awesome, awesome photographer, Mandy Krendel, who does these beautiful photographs at like 1 a.m. that are completely lit by the fracking flares. So there's the fire that comes out of the towers and some of the images around fracking.
What, there's fire coming out of like a tower?
Yeah.
Like Lord of the Rings stuff
Almost.
Going on here?
Yeah.
So that's gas catching on fire coming out of the ground.
Yeah. It's a release for the gas. And she's taking these beautiful photographs, these landscapes. So we'll have 9 of those presented in the lobby. It's intense.
Yeah. And I see these videos online, like the people turning on their tap water and it's flammable. What is that about? Are you going to talk about that? Because I'd like to know, like, what's going on there.
There is working water on stage. 2 working sinks on stage.
Does it catch on fire?
We don't know. You'll have to come and find out.
Oh, wow. This is really great. Because up until now, I've only seen it on YouTube videos. And so now it may actually happen. But yeah, that's unbelievable to me that happens.
Yeah. And the images of it, I mean, are beautiful. And that's something... We've been to Washington County many, many times with our entire design team, our entire cast. You know, Hatch has been there multiple times. Paul, like, was there all the time. And what we kept hearing, I think really profoundly, what we really took away from it, one, was that in no way is this a new conversation or experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think as an outsider or someone that hadn't heard the word fracking before, I thought it was this newfangled thing. And they, you know, the community rightly so compares it and thinks about it in context with coal mining.
Yeah.
That this has been a region where people have come from the outside, taken something and left for a very long time. And they connect, some of the people we talked to said, you know, first people took coal and now they're taking these natural gases. People also just take our culture. People come in. Professors from universities come in, study us, and they leave. Artists come in and they leave.
Mm.
So is Hatch a part of that cycle? We're like, are we doing the same thing? And that's why we've taken so long.
Mm.
And that's why we've thought about it. We don't want to do the same thing. So we have 3 community organizers on our team that are a part of the process. We are working with artists from Washington County. One of our cast members lives in a fracked area. Our costume designer is this wonderful, wonderful artist, Rebecca Harrison, who makes fiber art about Washington County. And,
wow.
And her work will be presented not only on stage, but also in the lobby. And we know that we're still a part of it. We're still strangers to this story, trying to understand it. But we strongly believe that there are skills we have. There's a capacity for us to create magic on stage with this.
Right.
And that's what we're hoping. We're trying. We're at least trying.
Fantastic. Well, we've got to see it again August 11th through 14th at the new Hazlett Theater here in Pittsburgh, Driftless. And there's a picture of me there.
You're looking great. That's a good color on you. It's nice.
Thank you. Yes, the paleness. It's very good. What do you not have time for here in Pittsburgh that you wish you did have time for?
You know, I've never done the incline.
Really? You're not the first person that has told me that.
Is that terrible?
But that's like a 20-minute excursion. I'm talking like, you know, if you... Because, I mean, I ask this because, as I am, you must be very, very busy with everything that you do. And that's what I'm always looking for is, gosh, if I just had more time, I could maybe solve all these problems. But for you, it's just a ride up and down the mountain.
Well, I think I wish I could...
And that's okay if that's your answer. I just want to be clear.
I think I wish I could also... Sometimes I just want to be a tourist in Pittsburgh or just a person who's like walking down.
It's so worth it because I know exactly what you mean. Because when I have a friend that comes in from out of town,
yeah,
we end up doing those touristy things. Like I went on the Gateway Clipper for the first time ever when a friend was in town. And I got misty-eyed looking at the city from that point of view and thought it was so beautiful. And I said, I can't believe I've never done this. You know, and I felt like a tourist, but you forget about those things.
Or I wish I could, I'm always driving around, and I wish I could be in the passenger seat and get to drive on every single bridge in the city. Like every time I come from Oakland and go over the Bloomfield Bridge and look onto like Bloomfield and Lawrenceville, like my heart skips a beat. And I am always in the driver's seat.
So you can't look.
I can't look. Thank you. I can't breathe. I can't think about it. And I think that's actually, I mean it literally, but I could take it to the metaphor place that we're all running in the arts community here. We're all running around anywhere, in any place. We're just running around like chickens with their heads cut off, right? And I'm trying to create beauty on stage and often just miss like how beautiful it is right outside that window.
Yeah. That's profound.
I just want to chill out. I'm tired.
Well, okay, so what we'll do is we'll set a day where we drive each other around town. And we each take turns being in the passenger seat. Or one day I'll just, you know, drive you, you know, and you could be Miss Daisy. And we'll just go around, you know, what bridge next, Miss Daisy? And we can just, go back and forth. That would be a good Berg-Levant segment. You know, like comedians in cars or whatever they do. Hook up the camera and we'll just go on a little ride.
But I'll just be crying. Is that okay?
I want that on film.
Okay, great.
Because that's art.
Yeah,
as a man
crying. I'll be teary for you.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Good.
And I don't know what I'll do though as a passenger. I'll probably be like, turn left, left. I'll be like that kind of like backseat driver. Can we play music? You know, the wicked. So it may not be as beautiful, but art nonetheless. Art is not always beautiful.
No, that's not the goal.
Right. Very good. What are your tastes in decor? Like, what do you like hang around your house?
Anything we can find cheaply at a thrift store.
Yeah,
part of it.
That's the best. Isn't when it's like something like, oh my gosh, this is so ridiculous.
I like a lot of the same thing.
Like literally, like I'm just gonna.
I wish we were doing this at my house now. We have this really beautiful sconce wall that me and my roommate put together. So it's you have like the sconces on your wall. We have like 15 of them on one wall.
Just sconces.
Yeah, none of them work. None of them function.
But that's art. You've made art out of just like lights, non-operational.
At least kitsch. We at least made kitsch.
Yeah.
We have more impressive than the sconce wall is our bean art, taken very seriously. We have a wall of pieces of wood from a set, of course.
Is this going to turn out like Jackson Pollock?
Beans. I wish, maybe. I don't think that's in my future. I don't imagine that anyone is going to put my bean art in a museum. But maybe. I mean,
well, no, I mean as far as the spattering. you had to make me get specific.
Yeah, not many people make me silent. That was good. You got me.
Welcome to Brian Edward.
Yeah, the bean art is in bean form.
If there is a classic conversation stopper, your pal Brian Edwards got it. This is why there's martinis on this show.
I should be finishing this.
So, and there you go. Yeah, that you have an escape from this a little bit. Because what they don't see is the shackle that's attached to your chair until our stage manager says that the interview is over. Which she's been trying to do for the last half hour. But we've just kept going on and on. I'm sorry, you just wouldn't stop talking. So, we learned a lot about you today. What is something about you that not a lot of people know? That's a good quality. Let's say that because, you know, it'll keep you safe.
It's less a quality, but a part of my life that I maybe don't talk about all the time. I spent a lot of time very, very seriously being involved in the art form of karate.
Oh.
And there are videos out there of me getting my butt kicked pretty impressively. I was a pretty impressive nerd in a...
Like, how old were you?
Like, between the ages of 7 and 11.
Okay, we all did it. I did karate, okay? Well, listen.
But I quit. I mean, I was very passionate about it. And I had to leave the business because I got cast as Daddy Warbucks.
Wait, you just referred to karate as the business?
Yeah, why not?
Like, 6-year-old karate as the business?
It was the first time I was on...
Like, you've got an agent?
I was on, like, TV. It was short.
Were you?
Glendale Heights TV.
But were you, like, did you go to, like, do competitions and things?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was so bad. The reason I got to go to the competitions was because in every room I've ever been in, I've been the teacher's pet. So even at the sport that I was quite terrible at, the teachers just had a soft spot.
So I remember, yeah, you had to do, like, rah, saw.
I was so bad. I was so bad.
And then, yeah, you went from, like, white belt to purple belt to, like, yellow belt. You know how you went to the belts?
Oh, yeah.
Because my father was military, we moved all around. I never got higher than yellow belt, but I had like 5 of them. Because I had to start over everywhere we moved. They didn't care. I'm like, but I have a yellow belt. They're like, no, they had to start me back at the white belt. Because since I say, you must start at the beginning, you're the grasshopper, and come all the way up. So yeah, I never got past yellow belt, but I had a bunch of them because I had to start over all the time. But I never got any better. So... I understood. I'm like, yes, sensei, you're right. I must, you know, work my way up again. And then, yeah, somehow or another, that just found its way out of my life. I can't imagine why or how. But now that would be something, to see us go to a beginner's karate class and film it and see what we remember.
After our bridge tour, I mean.
With, like, little kids, and they'd be kicking our butts, probably. Kids are today are tough. I would be kind of terrified. Now, against you, I'd feel evenly matched, because we're, you know, we haven't done it in a long time, you know, but, you know, some of those kids, I'm going to get a purple belt kid up in your eye, I'd be like, take my money.
I would just protect you, I promise. Together, I think we'd be formidable force.
If together we made one purple belt, yeah. Might be able to do it. Even just filming, going in and trying to pitch this idea. Like, no, look, we want to be beginners. Yeah, we may be taller than these kids, but trust us, we're like, they're better. Like, we will learn from them. We're just very humble. All right, so look, we've got a lot to do. So wrap up this show. I got to drive you over bridges, and then we got to find a karate class to take.
Done.
Perfect.
Yeah, and we'll make some bean art. I got him to laugh. Does that ever happen?
What? That you got me to laugh? I laugh all the time.
You laugh all the time.
I do. I mean, I usually edit it out because I don't want people to think I have a sense of humor. You know, because it's all about you. You know, I don't want to steal attention. I want to, you know, give attention. So I just try to be like, you know. You didn't see me nod off there a couple times. We were talking about something about chickens. I was like, yeah, what? Yeah, I auditioned for that, right? Yeah, but we got through it. And thank you for being such a good guest. Cheers.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for these.
Oh, yeah. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.